Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, Spectator's daily politics podcast. Today I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and Will Tanner from the think tank Onward. So we've had the news today that the BBC will not challenge a ruling over its coverage of a police raid at Sir Cliff Richard's home in 2014 at the Court of Appeal. Fraser, what does this tell us?
Well, the BBC was obviously messed up with the Cliff Richard thing. I mean, to actually have a television camera film live. From a helicopter. It was going way over the top. But the judgment against them at the time raised some quite serious questions of free speech. I mean, the High Court ruled that the BBC had breached its privacy. It's one of those classic right to privacy versus the freedom of expression, the public's right to know. And at the time, it seemed as if a judgment moved the dial to protect privacy even against the public interest. So a lot of newspapers, The Telegraph, The Sun, were saying, look, we're no great fans of the BBC, they completely messed this up. But if you disentangle the BBC's mistake from the judge's ruling, it seems as if the dial has gone against press freedom here, and we need to be careful about this. So that led to pressure for the BBC to appeal, thinking, OK, BBC, we know you've messed up, but there's a lot of people now who are now depending on you to fight this, and today they've decided not to. Now, you might expect Times and Telegraph to come out tomorrow saying this is absolutely outrageous, the BBC have chickened out. But what happened in between time was that the judge issued a legal clarification saying, actually, my judgment has been misinterpreted. There hasn't been any changes. I did not intend to say the celebrities have got greater protection than ordinary people. I didn't intend to move the dial between privacy and the public's right to know. So when he made that clarification, the wider legal issues subsided. Now, when that happened, the debate changed, and the BBC's case started to look a lot weaker and a lot bleaker. So that is why I think they won't have decided to appeal. All that remains, shorn off the right of free speech principle, if that's out of the window, the only thing that remains is the BBC's blunder, and that is not something they want to draw attention on or spend taxpayers' money, or licensed payers' money, as they dodgily call it, on the subject.
Yeah, because the corporation has said they're now going to seek advice from their attorney general for the ruling's impact on future reporting.
Now, this is a complete joke. They're basically saying, we're going to go to Parliament, we're going to go to the government, can you please sort this out? Politicians have no interest in protecting press freedom. They never have. They always make, I exclude from that the 12 heroic Leveson rebels who voted against the Leveson report, but every other MP in the House of Commons there was all set to regulate the press and force us to join this dodgy regulator on penalty of all sorts of dreadful fines. Now, so the politician's natural state is they don't mind anything that makes the press's life more difficult, because after all these investigative powers of ours might be applied to them. So I think the BBC is just having a laugh when it says it's going to ask the Attorney General to protect the press. It's never going to happen. But it doesn't seem as if the great principle we thought they were fighting for still applies.
So as an editor, you're not worried?
I don't think the ruling was a good thing. I'm still slightly unnerved by it. But if you take the judge's letter together with his ruling, it doesn't seem as if the legal precedent has moved against the press. I mean, we'll only ever really know in the future case and in the future judgment, so it's difficult to tell.
Now, moving on to trains, we have the news today that rail passengers will see the price of rail fares increase by as much as 3% in January. Given that trains are barely running in some areas of the country, well, this isn't really a vote winner, is it?
So I think it's clearly very difficult for commuters up and down the country, and I'm sure there'll be many people who will think that they may conceive themselves as just about managing families, as people who are living increasingly under kind of living standards pressure and kind of worried about how to get to the end of the month, and see this as a bit of the kick in the teeth. I think the key thing is, and this is what the government has been saying today, that actually this increase is linked to a very poor measure of inflation. It's linked to RPI, which the ONS itself has been very clear in criticising, and which is not the same measure of inflation used by the vast majority of the rest of the country, that's CPI. And the Transport Secretary, Chris Grayling, has indicated his support for moving to CPI, but linked that explicitly to changes to the link of inflation for rail workers' wages, and which proved more difficult. So there's clearly a sticking point between the unions and the government. And I think for the average commuter, that will be quite a complicated explanation to a problem that they really face every day.
Yeah, Fraser, the RMT union have accused them of trying to impose a pay cap on its members. Do you think voters are going to see this as the Tories trying to blame the workers here?
I think there is many a worker out there who would love to have a pay rise linked to RPI inflation. With all of it, this hardly ever happens now. And the average worker is seeing below inflation or barely above inflation pay increases. So I can't see much public sympathy for train drivers who are actually really well paid when you look at other comparable jobs. So I think Chris Grayling has actually chosen, for public opinion, quite a good battle to fight here. But then again, the reason train drivers are so well paid is because they're quite capable of bringing the network to a standstill to pursue their higher wages. I mean, we might slag off the RMT as being sort of lefty dinosaurs, but they're very good at what they do, which is make sure their members are paid a lot of money.
I never really read any positive headlines about Chris Grayling these days. It constantly seems to be mess-ups by his department. Well, do you feel like he's becoming one of the most loathed ministers, or am I being slightly unfair here?
I think that's potentially unfair, but I think there is certainly a constituency of people who have followed Chris Grayling and throughout his career, actually, in a number of different departments, and have sought to criticise him for pursuing what might be termed kind of traditional right-wing policies in those departments. And certainly in some of those departments, some of those policies haven't been as effective as he, I'm sure, would have wanted, whether that's the work programme, the rehabilitation revolution, and indeed some of the policies around trains. I actually think Chris is a kind of self-confessed train obsessive. He's got actually some quite interesting and radical plans for integrated railways and generating more investment in the railway. But clearly he's a bit of a lightning rod for criticism.
He's one of the great survivors of this government, Chris Grayling. I can't think of the times I've been told he's about to get sacked or about to get moved. He's always still hanging on, and usually in pretty difficult jobs and difficult decisions. These nationalisations that he's been involved in recently, they've not been good for a Tory, but he's still there plodding along.
Yeah, he has yet to be talked up as a leadership hopeful, which is saying something given most cabinet members have been at one point.
Yes, that probably puts him in the bottom 10% of the Tory party.
Now, moving on to reefs. The latest in Reefgate yesterday was Jeremy Corbyn gave another interview about allegations, his admission in a way, that he attended a memorial for those accused of being involved in the Munich Olympics massacre. He refused to apologise for attending it, appeared to double down, and pointed out that although there's a photo of him holding a reef, there are many reefs and many people with reefs. Will, how do you think Reefgate is playing out outside of Westminster?
So I think ordinary people looking at these newspaper reports, looking at the photographs, and indeed what Jeremy Corbyn is saying in response to them, will be thinking quite deeply about whether or not this man is the trustworthy politician he presented himself to be when he won the Labour leadership. Remember, he promised a gentler, kinder politics. He promised honesty and kind of respectful politics. And actually, what we've seen over the past week, and it's something that we've seen time and time again before, is a leader who doesn't respond to criticism, actually refuses to acknowledge any guilt or blame on his own part, and tries to shut down debate rather than debating with his opponents and actually proving the point that he's trying to make. And actually, in the interview that he gave last night, there were a couple of really terrible moments where he rolled his eyes and sighed in an incredibly patronising and disparaging manner to the interviewer. And it showed a level of disdain to journalistic inquiry and investigative press, and actually the rights of the victims of the bombs, for a serious explanation to actually what is quite a serious matter.
Now, last night in Stoke, we had a Corbyn campaign event, and outside it, I think there were about 400 supporters who went out to back their man. Two of whom said to Sky News he couldn't be anti-Semitic because he had won the Nobel Peace Prize. Fraser, do you think, just to clarify, he hasn't, do you think Corbyn mania, it doesn't really matter what's in the papers, he will have this core base?
That's exactly what I think. And of course, that's why he's not saying sorry. That's part of his appeal to his supporters. He's the man for whom sorry is not just the hardest word, but a word that's not in the vocabulary. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn is infallible, really. And I have to say, though I am absolutely appalled at his politics, his behaviour, you've got to concede that he is not buckling to pressure. He is still staying. It's acting as if the press is being outrageous and getting so upset about this. And he is, I wouldn't quite say becoming scandal-proof, but you do wonder what there is left to throw at Jeremy Corbyn that will destabilise Jeremy Corbyn. Every time you think it can't get much worse for him, it does. But, with one exception, it doesn't diminish his stature in the eyes of his supporters, and his supporters are the guys who twice have elected him leader, so for as long as those guys are happy with him, he's here to stay as leader of the Labour Party. Until such times, of course, as John McDonnell kicks him out.
And finally, I mean, we've had anti-Semitism rise with Labour before, and they've coincided with a mayoral election, local elections, and a general election. Yet, in all these accounts, Labour have basically managed to exceed expectations a lot of the time. Do voters just not care that much about anti-Semitism?
I think in certain places we've seen that the anti-Semitism row has had a really significant effect on core Labour support, and we saw that in the locals last time. But I think there is a general point about the extent to which people really see this as an issue which affects them around the country. And where this will really cut through, I think, is where people start to see it less as an issue about anti-Semitism and more an issue about the honesty of the leader of the Labour Party. And so I think it's a proxy issue for kind of the honesty of our politicians as much as it is an issue about anti-Semitism in this country.
Thank you, Will. Thank you, Fraser. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please do remember to rate and also obviously subscribe on the iTunes store. And we also have a special offer. Simply go to spectator.co.uk/water to receive a free thermal insulated Spectator water bottle, not quite like the Love Island version, along with a subscription to the magazine for 12 weeks for £12.